und herzlich willkommen zu Oshun Episode 134. Ja, es ist tatsächlich schon die 134. Und ja, Oshun ist tatsächlich Deutschlands größter Lifestyle-Podcast. Die Zahlen lügen nicht. Shoutout an euch und vielleicht auch so ein bisschen an uns. Und an dieser Stelle an vielleicht meine Wenigkeit, obwohl man sich selbst ja nicht auf die Schulter klopft, aber ihr müsst ja wissen, wem ihr hier zuhört. Amadeus Thüner und auf der anderen Seite Fabian Fabs-Gorsler. Und im Gegensatz zu letzter Episode, wo wir uns zusammen auf einem Roadtrip durch Amsterdam befunden haben, ist dieser Roadtrip leider nun vorbei und wir sitzen wieder in unserem Studio und machen unsere Podcast-Episode. Aber das ist bei weitem natürlich nichts Schlechtes, sondern natürlich auch etwas sehr Schönes, wobei ich ehrlicherweise sagen muss, Amsterdam ist schon auch gutes Pflaster für so eine Podcast-Episode. Oder was würdest du sagen, Fabs?
Da kann man dir nur voll zustimmen. Ich wollte auch gerade sagen, ich vermisse Amsterdam, ich vermisse unseren Roadtrip, ich vermisse einfach den Tag auf der Sneakerness, die Leute, mit denen wir gesprochen haben, aber vor allem auch die Stadt Amsterdam, die ja, Läden, definitiv. Die Restaurants, das Essen und natürlich auch die Zeit mit dir und Marie.
Shoutout an dieser Stelle, wo wir beim Thema Essen sind, an Flo's Deli, wo wir uns morgens die Frühstücksbagels geholt haben. Eine wirklich große, ganz große Empfehlung. Ist wirklich sehr, sehr gut, Flo's Deli. Und natürlich auch, da haben wir den Abend dann beschlossen in schöner Runde, Pizza Pepe. Und Pizza Pepe hat natürlich ein paar mehr Locations. Beziehungsweise, ich glaube, 3 sind sogar, die sie in Amsterdam haben. Wirklich ganz großartige Pizza. Gehen wir jetzt seit geraumer Zeit schon hin, immer wenn wir in Amsterdam sind. Von daher ist es auch immer ein fröhliches, good to see you back. Und sowas liebe ich ja auch, wenn man herzlich empfangen wird und dann auch eben kulinarisch gut bekocht. Und Pizza Pepe ist da auf jeden Fall auch eine weitere Empfehlung, die ich an dieser Stelle aussprechen kann. Ansonsten Empfehlung definitiv auch nächstes Jahr auf die Sneakerness in Amsterdam zu gehen, denn, und das hoffe ich, dass das durch unsere Episode klar geworden ist, it was a hell lot of fun.
Und vielleicht sind wir nächstes Jahr wieder dabei und dann kann man sich ja mal treffen.
It's double hell of a fun. Das auf jeden Fall. Ansonsten habe ich gehört, du warst beim Friseur, weil ich habe es nur gehört, ich habe es noch nicht gesehen, du hast nämlich kein Foto rumgeschickt und ich habe den Roadtrip aus Amsterdam ja dann nochmal um ein paar Stationen verlängert, also ich war danach noch in Rotterdam, ich war noch in Antwerpen und ich war noch in Brüssel und jetzt bin ich gerade erst wiedergekommen, das heißt, wir hatten noch gar keine Zeit, uns zu treffen. Das holen wir jetzt die Tage nach. Wir gehen ja was essen. Aber da wir jetzt schon die Episode aufnehmen und ich sehr neugierig bin und die Leute da draußen natürlich auch, vor allen Dingen, weil du regelmäßig über das Thema Frisuren sprichst, finde ich, du kannst das an dieser Stelle auf jeden Fall auch nochmal ausführen. Was ist geworden? Buzzcut oder 0,2 Millimeter, Glatze, hast du gefärbt? Gibt es vielleicht auch Haarverlängerung? Was ist geworden?
Ja, also kein Buzzcut, aber fast. Ich habe mich für ein Mid-Fade entschieden und dann auch relativ kurz oben, weil es ja jetzt wärmer wird. Ich fange an zu schwitzen und bei meiner Haarenmasse sieht das total unsexy aus. Deswegen dachte ich lieber einfach ab.
Klingt so, als ob du normalerweise ein Afro tragen würdest oder so bei meiner Haarmasse oder halt so metalmäßig so bis Mitte Rücken.
Naja, das, was noch auf dem Kopf ist, meine ich. Nein, ich habe auch sehr lange auf diesen Termin gewartet, weil, wie gesagt, ich war ja 3 Monate in Elternzeit, habe mir dort dann ein paar Mal die Haare geschnitten natürlich, was da auch viel günstiger ist, aber habe in Berlin mein Go-To-Friseur und der ist relativ busy, meistens auch ausgebucht oder nur dann verfügbar, wenn ich keine Zeit habe. Das heißt,
der Friseur der Stars.
Nicht wirklich, aber er ist ein cooler Typ, auch ein super netter Typ. Shoutout Justin an dieser Stelle von Wallace Wallace. Aber ja, ich kam zurück aus Thailand und dachte, okay, es wäre jetzt an der Zeit, vielleicht in den nächsten 2-3 Wochen zum Friseur zu gehen. Schau online nach Termin, 9 Wochen alles ausgebucht. Und ich so, wow, damn. Krass. Und dann habe ich gedacht, so, okay, gehe ich jetzt zu jemand anderem? Do I cheat on my Friseur in Berlin? Oder warte ich wirklich 9 Wochen? Und dann habe ich auch 9 Wochen gewartet und dementsprechend sind dann auch meine Haare länger geworden, ausgewachsen und sahen dann...
Ich verstehe gar nicht, warum du nicht Bescheid gesagt hast. Ich habe doch meine Haarschneidemaschine immer mit dabei. Ich rasiere mir doch alle 2 Tage, ich fast gesagt, wobei stimmt fast, also zweimal die Woche, das sind im Schnitt alle 3-4 Tage, rasiere ich mir selbst den Kopf. Das klingt irgendwie, klingt das gefährlich bis auch schmerzhaft, stimmt aber nicht, ist ja egal. Auf jeden Fall schneide ich mir selbst die Haare so. Hätte ich bei dir auch machen können, kein Problem. Hättest du was gesagt, kurz in der Lobby vom Vestana Hotel, 5-Sterne-Hotel, aber egal, kurz den Kopf rasieren. Vielleicht hätte ich auch so ein Friseurgeschäft dann aufmachen können, noch ein bisschen Kohle verdienen. Egal, wir driften ab. Nächstes Mal sag aber Bescheid.
Mach ich,
aber dann nennen wir beide dieselbe Frisur. Ich weiß auch nicht, ob das.
Aber ich ohne Bart. Soll. Also da wären wir noch anders genug, dass man uns auseinanderhalten kann.
Ja, dass die Verwechslungsgefahr besteht jetzt nicht, würde ich nicht behaupten zumindest. Aber ich meine, so selber Frisur ist irgendwie ja auch ein bisschen langweilig. Und ich meine, naja, wenn du noch kannst, dann mach was Schönes raus. Also von daher, Dauerwelle, habe ich gehört, soll auch wieder der heiße Scheiß sein. Denk True. Drüber nach.
True.
True, Bro. Okay, wir switchen das Thema. Kommen von dem, was man vom Kopf gelassen hat, zu dem, was man in den Kleiderschrank bekommen hat. Das ist eine gute Überleitung. Egal, wir sprechen über unsere LPUs, die Latest Pickups. Fabs, was gab's Gutes abseits der neuen Frisur?
Also ich habe mir tatsächlich nichts selbst gekauft, obwohl auf der Sneakernest schon ein paar Gems waren. Und
aber kein ISPA Road Warrior.
Genau, kein ISPA Road Warrior. Und ich hatte ja ein Budget, aber nur für diesen Road Warrior. Und deswegen musste ich den anderen Schuhen leider einen Pass abteilen.
Sollte irgendwer da draußen einen ISPA Road Warrior haben? Also, wir planen durchaus auch nach Köln und nach Rotterdam zu kommen, zu Sneakernest. Vielleicht auch noch die ein oder andere Messe mitzunehmen. Checkt auf jeden Fall vorher Instagram, slidet Fabs in die DMs, bringt ihm den Schuh mit. Ich will, dass da endlich Ruhe ist.
Bringt den auf jeden Fall mit, aber bringt auch bitte, bitte, bitte einen guten Preis mit, weil auf StockX geht der für 800 bis 1000 Euro, das ist mir leider etwas zu viel. Wenn ihr den für Retail verkaufen wollt, dann wäre ich dabei, so ein bisschen über Retail.
You wish. Das ist immer so die, das sind so diese klassischen Facebook-Aussagen, ne? So, hat einer den Schuh, aber auch für Retail wäre schon cool.
Den Off-White Chicago für Retail bitte.
Mhm. Aber geht's irgendwie vielleicht? Ich meine, ich habe doch auch immer so gute Deals für andere gemacht, dann vielleicht einer.
Genau.
Ich glaube, das ist ein bisschen weit raus, aber hey, vielleicht wird's irgendwas.
Ja, also
trotzdem gab es ein bisschen was anderes.
Genau, gekauft habe ich mir nichts, aber ein paar Seedings habe ich bekommen. Und zwar auch von Brands, die man nicht immer sieht oder von denen man vielleicht nicht so viel hört wie von den Mainstream-Brands wie Nike, Adidas, New Balance oder ASICS. Der erste Schuh war der High Snobiety Saucony Pro Grid Triumph 4 in der Beige-Farbe. Das war ein heißnobiety.com Exclusive. Der wurde in 2 Colorways gedroppt und der ist schon sehr nice. Der ist auch sehr, sehr bequem und ich find's auch nett, dass mein alter Arbeitgeber manchmal an mich denkt und hier und da mal was rüberschickt. Also Shoutout an Sonja und das Highsnob Team. Das ist ein wirklich cooler Schuh und auch ein sehr cooles Projekt, weil ich denke, Saucony ist eine Brand, die wirklich am Kommen ist. Auf jeden Fall.
Du hast es zumindest auch in unserem letzten Editorial auf Instagram geschrieben und das auch mit Recht. Das Ding war ja schon ein wenig vor der Highsnobiety Collab geplant und ist dann natürlich passenderweise dazu online gegangen, denn wir haben natürlich ein Auge auf gute Timings oder auch ein bisschen Glück oder mehr Glück als Verstand. Ja, manchmal ist es auch eine Mischung. Auf jeden Fall, wer Interesse an einem kleinen Deep Dive zum Thema und zur Brand Saucony hat, auf jeden Fall auschecken. Hast du sehr treffend zusammengefasst. Und ja, vielleicht erleben wir dieses Jahr noch ein bisschen mehr von Saucony. Mich würde es auf jeden Fall freuen.
Genau, Facts. Dann habe ich von Saucony direkt auch noch ein zweites Modell bekommen, und zwar den ProGrid Omni 9 in einer der 2 General Release Colorways. Ich habe den blauen oder Metallic Silver Blue bekommen und der ist auch super dope. Der hat wirklich diesen 2000er Flair, den viele Brands jetzt wieder auf den Markt bringen. Und wie bereits bei dem Highsnobiety Saucony gesagt, das ist auch ein sehr, sehr bequemer Schuh. Mit dem könnte man eigentlich auch heutzutage noch Sport machen. Ich werde es wahrscheinlich nicht tun, aber es ist ein sehr, sehr nicer Schuh. Also wer so.
Apropos Sport, was trägst du eigentlich beim Sport, wenn du im Gym bist?
Ich habe 2 Sportsneaker. Ich habe einen, den ich zum Laufen trage, und zwar den On Running, das war der Cloudboom Echo, also deren Marathonschuh, aber nicht der neueste, sondern glaube ich den von vor 2, 2,5 Jahren, auch mega nices Ding. Und dann trage ich den Adidas 4D Forward, wenn ich mal einfach im Gym bin oder HIIT-Training mache, weil der etwas fester ist, nicht so ganz so weich wie der On. Und der ist auch ganz nice und bequem.
Gut, haben wir das auch geklärt.
Apropos On, der dritte Schuh, den ich bekommen habe, war der On Cloud Monster. Und das ist auch auf jeden Fall ein Monster-Schuh. Ich bin ja auch Fan von aggressiven Tooling-Designs und das hat On auf jeden Fall. Aber an dieser Stelle nochmal ein großes Shoutout und Congrats an Amma, weil du hast ja On als Kunde gelandet und hilfst der Brand ein bisschen bei diversen Creative Direction Branding-Themen.
Ja, vielen Dank. Danke. Nehme ich natürlich gerne mit. Freut mich sehr. Freut mich auch, dass dir der Cloud Monster gut gefällt. Erste Aktivierung war dann ja im Rahmen eines kleinen Laufes und eines noch größeren Events zusammen mit Overkill in Berlin Anfang Mai. Und das ist ja auch schon wieder ein bisschen her. Und da kommt noch ein bisschen was und ein bisschen was ich mitbegleiten darf. Freue ich mich sehr drüber. Und deswegen auch schön zu hören, dass du Bock auf On hast. Ich hoffe, da draußen gibt's noch ein paar mehr Leute, die Bock auf On haben. Und da bin ich gerne dabei. Du hast kein Geld ausgeben müssen, was toll ist, freut mich für dich. Ich musste ein bisschen Geld in die Hand nehmen. Und das Erste, was ich gekauft habe, war dann schon auch auf der Sneakerness, und zwar der Air Max One Huffquake, und zwar der von 2007. Ein Schuh, der eine gewisse Geschichte auch für mich hat. Ich habe ihn damals in Bochum gekauft, in einem Sneaker-Store. Ich habe vorher angerufen, habt ihr den da, könnt ihr mir für 1,5 Stunden einen zurücklegen, weil dann setze ich mich jetzt ins Auto und dann komme ich vorbei. Denn ich hatte an dem Tag noch einen Termin in Düsseldorf und war dementsprechend auf dem Weg. Und das hat sehr gut gepasst. Ergo bin ich erst nach Bochum gefahren, bin aus dem Auto gesprungen, hab den Schuh mitgenommen, bin weiter nach Düsseldorf gefahren. Und dort habe ich tatsächlich Kollega zum Interview getroffen. In einer Zeit, in der Kollega noch so ungefähr ausgesehen hat wie ich, was die Statur anbelangt. Und das war ein sehr interessantes Aufeinandertreffen, weil Kollega durchaus schon so seine Rolle des Pimps gespielt hat, noch nicht so wirklich die Statur dazu hatte, aber es sehr schwierig war, in diesem Gespräch ihn aus seiner Rolle rauszukriegen und ihm vielleicht auch mal so ein Lächeln zu entlocken. Interessanterweise ein paar Monate zuvor, als Casper mit ihm auf Tour war, traf ich mich mit Casper und den restlichen Leuten in Dortmund auf dem Konzert. Und ich meinte so, und wie ist es so mit Kollege auf Tour und läuft und bla bla. Und Ben meinte damals, das ist der witzigste Mensch der Welt. Und ich war so, ist dein Ernst? Er so, ja, Mann, der ist wirklich ein lustiger Typ. So, und ich hatte gehofft, dass er dementsprechend im Interview so ein bisschen aus seiner Rolle rauskommt und ich auch was davon mitkriege von dem lustigen Dasein. Hat nicht ganz funktioniert, war trotzdem ein schönes Interview. Ich weiß gar nicht mehr, ob das schon für die Juice war oder noch für ein Online-Magazin, für das ich geschrieben habe. Aber zurück zum Schuh kommend, war es dementsprechend sofort eine Connection zu einem erlebnisreichen Tag, nennen wir es mal so. Ich habe mich nämlich, glaube ich, dann auf dem Rückweg auf der Autobahn verfahren. Weil es auch strange ist, weil es gab schon Navis, ich meine, es war 2007. Egal, irgendwie war auf jeden Fall einiges los in meiner Erinnerung. Und ich habe den Schuh dann aber Jahre später dummerweise, wie man heute sagen muss, verkauft. War umso glücklicher, dass ich ihn auf der Sneakerness für einen durchaus okayen bis guten Preis gefunden habe. Nicht Deadstock, was auch richtig so ist, weil der Schuh 2007, also ich meine jetzt so 16 Jahre später, ungetragener Air Max 1, wäre mir wahrscheinlich nur vom Ansehen schon kaputt gegangen. Aber ich habe ihn auch jetzt schon auf einer kleinen Runde in Berlin jetzt getragen. Funktioniert alles soweit gut, fingers crossed, dass es auch dabei bleibt. Aber da war ich sehr froh drüber und habe jetzt wiederum die Geschichte mit dem Schuh, dass ich ihn eben auf der Sneakerness gekauft habe, auf unserem Roadtrip, während der Produktion der Episode, mit all dem, was dazugehört. Ich ihn dann danach noch durch ganz Amsterdam tragen durfte. Auf jeden Fall sehr froh, den wieder im Besitz zu haben. Dann als nächstes Haritos SB Dunk, und zwar Double Up. Ein extrem guter Schuh, deswegen mussten zwei hier hinkommen. Und zu guter Letzt, ich hatte es ja eben schon gesagt, wir haben den Roadtrip von Amsterdam dann aus noch verlängert nach Rotterdam, nach Antwerpen und nach Brüssel. Und da musste ein bisschen was geshoppt werden. Unter anderem die Stussy-Weste aus dem aktuellen Drop und ein Arte Antwerp-Hoodie, den ich mir allerdings nicht in Antwerpen, sondern in Brüssel gekauft habe, was aber okay ist. Und da auf jeden Fall auch Shoutout ans Team von Arte Antwerp in Brüssel. Super nice Jungs, bisschen gequatscht über Klamotten, über Paris Fashion Week, über Frank Ocean. Von daher sehr, sehr nice. Und wenn du mich jetzt noch fragen möchtest, in welcher Stadt ist mir beim Roadtrip neben Amsterdam, die ich ja, ich glaube, das weiß mittlerweile fast jeder, wirklich sehr liebe, am besten gefallen hat, auf jeden Fall Brüssel. Ganz, ganz großen Shoutout an Brüssel. Ich war vor einigen Jahren schon mal dort, aber wirklich nur für ein paar Stunden und eine Übernachtung. Jetzt sind wir ein wenig länger dort geblieben. Es war wirklich richtig gut. Es hat mir sehr gut gefallen. So ein bisschen wie so ein kleines Paris, was so die Straßen, Gassen, die Architektur anbelangt. Hat aber natürlich durchaus auch trotzdem was Belgisches. Ehrlicherweise muss man aber auch sagen, Belgien ist recht klein, von daher gibt es da durchaus auch viele Einflüsse. Aber gutes Essen, gute Stores, man kann gut shoppen gehen, nette Leute, viel gesehen. Also von daher Brüssel definitiv eine Reise wert. Aber auch Antwerpen nice, auch Rotterdam nice, wusste ich allerdings auch schon vorher. Und ansonsten natürlich Amsterdam. Und die Tage geht es dann nach Paris zur Fashion Week. Wenn diese Episode rauskommt, bin ich gerade auch schon tatsächlich in Paris. Freue mich sehr drauf. Da war ich nämlich schon etwas länger nicht mehr. Deswegen haben wir auch den Trip auf etwas länger eingeplant. Mal gucken, was ich da so erlebe. Auf jeden Fall schon mal ein bisschen was für den Podcast geplant. Und da will ich jetzt nichts anteasern, weil das ist ein bisschen zu weit in die Zukunft. Und you never know. Aber die Liste ist auf jeden Fall sehr, sehr lang. Kommen wir vom LPU zum What's on my feet today. Da bin ich gespannt, was du heute an den Fuß gezogen hast. Wetter in Berlin irgendwie ein bisschen abstrus heute, ne? Eigentlich schon 26 Grad, aber auch so Wolken verhangen und irgendwie nicht so geil. Aber es hat glücklicherweise nicht geregnet, von daher, was gab's?
Also ich fand das Wetter nicht so schlecht. Es war mir die letzten Tage fast zu sonnig und es sind ein bisschen zu viele Pollen durch die Luft geflogen. Deswegen,
ja, okay, das stimmt.
Ja, deswegen war ich heute relativ viel draußen, auch auf dem Spielplatz.
Alleine oder mit Lenny?
Natürlich alleine. Ich bin ja der.
Rutschen gewesen und
genau.
Schaukeln.
Und
alleine wippen.
Ich muss ja jeden Tag mein Check-in bei Foursquare machen, damit ich dann da weiterhin Bürgermeister bin.
Ah ja, stimmt. Das verfällt sonst. Verstehe. Okay, yeah. Was hattest du an?
Ich hatte den Tremaine Emery Denim Tears Asics Gel MC Plus an. Stark. Wieder ein Schuh, der etwas under the radar fliegt. Nicht nur heute, aber auch vor ein paar Jahren, als der rauskam. Ich hatte den in dem Burnt Orange Colorway an und einfach ein richtig starker Schuh, sehr bequem, wie eigentlich alle ASICS-Schuhe sind. Aber auch ein Schuh, der vom Colorway her und auch von den Materialien sehr robust ist. Deswegen kann man den auch gerne am Spielplatz tragen, im Sandkasten. Und ja, da muss man sich keine Sorgen machen, dass er danach etwas verschmutzt aussieht. Auch weil er so ein bisschen pre-aged aus der Box kam. Also mega nicer Schuh. Großer Fan auch von dem Storytelling hinter dem Schuh. Der Schuh ist inspiriert von Tremaine Emerys Großvater, besser gesagt sein Haus in Georgia und die Straße und quasi der Staub von den Straßen. Es war so ein orangener Staub, den er eben an den Schuhen hatte. Und genau das wollte er dann mit diesem Colorway wieder zurückbringen. Also nette Geschichte, cooler Typ auch Tremaine Emery.
Ja, bleibt er jetzt Supreme Head Off oder wird er gekickt? Die Gerüchte gibt's ja jetzt echt seit Wochen.
Also man hat ja noch nicht ganz gesehen, was er da für Arbeit geleistet hat, weil die letzte Season ja die letzte war, wo er nichts mit der Creative Direction zu tun hatte. Ich meine, dass diese Season, also die Spring-Summer 23, die erste ist, wo er sein Händchen mit im Spiel hatte. Boah, ich weiß nicht, ich meine, der ist ein sehr, sehr smarter Dude, sehr clever, der ist ja schon seit Ewigkeiten dabei. Ich würde sagen, er bleibt noch ein bisschen und wenn es dann nicht so rund läuft, geht er vielleicht, aber ich meine, ich finde die Pieces und die Lookbooks
ich
eigentlich
auch
richtig gut.
Ich auch, also ich wusste schon, was du sagst, deswegen habe ich auch direkt gesagt, ich auch. Also mir gefällt es auch wirklich sehr gut, was er da bisher gemacht hat. Von daher, ich finde es schade, aber you never know. Deswegen,
ja.
Wir stecken nicht drin. Zumindest haben wir es nicht zu entscheiden.
Was hattest du?
Hat mich auf jeden Fall keiner angerufen, deswegen. Janowski OG in einem Canvas-Material. Ich habe, jetzt muss ich kurz überlegen, der OG ist schwarz-weiß, dann habe ich ein Wildleder in schwarz-weiß und den Canvas in schwarz-weiß. Also ich habe drei schwarz-weiße Janowski OGs, die kein Mensch voneinander unterscheiden könnte, wenn man nicht genau hinguckt, weil es ist eigentlich nur das Obermaterial, aber es ist der perfekte schwarz-weiße, ich will nicht mal sagen eine Kord-Silhouette, aber flacher Skate-Schuh, den man nutzen kann, wenn man kein Vans tragen möchte. Das ist die Einschränkung. Ansonsten natürlich immer Oldschool, Era, Authentic. Das geht natürlich immer. Aber wenn ich dann Bock habe auf Nike, dann Janowski. Und ich freue mich auch sehr, dass die OG-Silhouette zurückgekommen ist. Die beiden Colorways haben mir jetzt noch nicht so gut gefallen. Den einen habe ich direkt verdrängt, der andere ist grün, aber mit so einer Abstufung. Da war ich noch nicht so Fan von. Aber schön zu sehen, dass der Schuh wieder da ist. Wundere ich mich ehrlicherweise, dass der noch nicht so angenommen wurde, dass es keinen Hype gibt. Ich meine, es war mal einst Nikes bestverkaufter Sneaker eine Zeit lang. Nee, wundere ich mich ehrlicherweise nicht drüber. Ändert aber nichts an der Tatsache, ich habe auf jeden Fall noch genug hier. Von daher, ich bin eingedeckt, alles cool. Den hatte ich heute am Fuß. Großartiger Schuh, alles gut.
Ja, Janowski kann man auf jeden Fall tragen. Ist ein Hast Daily. Du einen? Ich habe keinen, aber ich weiß, dass Leon Goretzkas Favorite Schuh der Janowski ist.
Was ist das für ein Fun Fact? Echt?
Ja,
ist das so?
Ich hatte mal ein Interview mit ihm über Nike, als ich noch bei Highsnob war, und da hatten wir gefragt, ja, was sein Favorite Schuh ist, was er so trägt und so weiter und so fort. Und
er hat Janowski gesagt? Echt?
Er meinte, Janowski ist sein Favorite. Er ist ja auch nicht so sehr in der Fashion-Szene wie jetzt ein Leroy Sané, Serge Gnabry.
Die hätten wahrscheinlich Louis. Was ist dein Favorite Schuh von Nike? Ja, Louis Vuitton.
Ja, aber wie gesagt, er war ein großer Fan von Janowski und
okay. Das macht ihn mir gleich sympathisch.
Ja, ich fand das auch ganz cool. Cooler Typ, auf jeden Fall.
Wir kommen ins Thema der 134. Episode, reingeschlittert, als würden wir Eiskunst laufen. Und zwar geht's um das Resale-Game. Und das ist auch Mitte 2023 ein echt spannendes, wenn man auch, und so ehrlich muss man an dieser Stelle auch mal sein, sagen muss, dass die ganz großen Highlights in den letzten Monaten eher ausgeblieben sind. Also klar, wir haben den Travis Scott Jordan 1 gesehen, es gab SB-Releases mit Haritos oder auch auf dem Air Jordan 4. Und naja, wenn Jound oder ALD was gedroppt haben, dann wurde auch gerne mal etwas mehr Geld für in die Hand genommen. Aber eine weltweite Inflation hat das Geld etwas knapper und unter anderem einen Krieg bei uns um die Ecke die Preise etwas teurer werden lassen. Und das sind auch nur zwei Gründe, warum das einzige Zweitmarkt-Hoch vor gut 2-3 Jahren eben nicht mehr ganz so astronomisch ist. Ausnahmen bestätigen bekanntlich die Regel. Ein Stussy SB kostet leider weiterhin seine 4 Scheine auf StockX, zumindest in meiner Größe. Der ist bei Road Warrior, ist ja jetzt auch nicht wirklich günstiger geworden. Und die Brands arbeiten aktuell verstärkt an einer sich wieder limitierenden und verknappenden Release-Strategie, statt jeden Tag einen Schuh in den Markt zu werfen. Einmal pro Woche wäre ja auch immer noch eine krass hohe Taktung, wenn wir mal ehrlich sind. Wie gesagt, das Resale-Game ist auch Mitte 2023 ein spannendes und eines, welches uns beschäftigt. Und aus diesem Grund haben wir uns mal wieder im Rahmen eines Advertorials und in freundlicher Zusammenarbeit mit StockX zusammengesetzt, um einen Blick auf den Status quo und einen Ausblick auf die nächsten Monate zu werfen.
Wir haben einen ganz besonderen Gast im Studio zum Interview, und zwar Drew Haynes, Merchandising Director of Sneakers und Collectibles bei StockX. Und das Coole an Drew Haynes, obwohl da sind sehr, sehr viele Sachen, die Drew Haynes cool macht, aber das Coole an seinem Job ist, dass er quasi Trends verfolgen muss. Er muss schauen, was Leute tragen, was cool ist, was cool wird, aber auch die Unmengen von Daten, die StockX hat, weil viele Leute ja verkaufen und kaufen auf der Plattform, diese Daten zu benutzen, um Trends vorherzusagen. Das heißt, sein Job ist eigentlich, StockX darauf vorzubereiten, in den nächsten Monaten, in den kommenden Seasons oder Jahren das zu bieten, was Leute haben wollen. Auf der anderen Seite ist Drew Haynes auch ein sehr cooler Typ. Und ich finde persönlich, ist cool zu sehen, dass StockX weiterhin auf Leuten aus der Community setzt. Er ist ein Sneakerhead. Es zeigt einfach, wie wichtig der Company Authentizität ist. Sie wollen mit den Konsumenten reden. Sie wollen das bieten, was wir haben wollen, aber auch immer einen Schritt voraus sein, quasi den Trends nicht hinterherlaufen, sondern schon wissen, was kommt, was cool sein wird und was die coolsten Leute bei der Paris Fashion Week zum Beispiel und natürlich auch Amadeus tragen wird.
Das weiß niemand.
Let me guess. Fragment Jordan 1er?
Mal schauen, ich verrate an der Stelle noch nicht zu viel.
Aber in diesem Interview wird er auch erzählen, warum Ronnie Feig der Sneakerkultur so wichtig ist, warum Resale nie tot sein wird und wie wichtig auch Sneaker, die für unter Retail verkauft werden, für StockX sind. Er wird uns auch ein bisschen mehr über den Trailrunning und Outdoor-Trend erzählen, warum Salomon und Hoka zu den schnellst wachsenden Brands auf der Plattform zählen und warum Marken wie Vans, Asics, Converse und Diadora unter dem Radar fliegen, aber trotzdem am Kommen sind. Drew, welcome to the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
Thank you for joining us on this episode of Oshuin, your debut. We're happy to have you here. We're happy to intro you to our listeners. Before we get started, we want to know a little bit about yourself, how you got into sneakers and streetwear, and yeah, where you're from, what you're all about.
It's great to join you. So I grew up in Pennsylvania in the Philly area, and my first introduction to sneakers was actually through streetwear and through a brand called LRG, which I assume you're familiar with, called Lifted Research Group. And everyone in my high school was just obsessed with this brand. I mean, we would, you know, I remember begging my mom to drive, you know, an hour or so to get to the only mall in town that had it, which was the King of Prussia Mall, which for those of you familiar, it's a huge shopping mall near the Philly area. It's one of the biggest in the country. And yeah, that was my first introduction to the brand, and that was, or to streetwear rather. And that brand was run by a guy named Jonas Bivakwa, and he was kind of like a hype beast before hype beast culture. This guy was like a trendsetter. He was, I mean, just look up a picture of him. Like, I would encourage your listeners to look up a photo of him and just see how he dressed. He passed away more than 10 years ago now. But I think that he's one of those people that kind of really set the pace for, like, you know, what we consider like hypebeast culture or sneaker and streetwear culture today. And then from there, you know, I had an experience with Supreme where I went to college. My freshman year of college was 2011. And during that year, I don't know how I really got familiar with Supreme, but it was the fall winter 2011 season. And I just logged on. I remember looking up, you know, when the season was starting, and I went on and I, you know, purchased during the first drop of the season, which, you know, it was 2011. It wasn't too hard to get things from Supreme back then. I bought a camp cap. This is back when camp caps were really hot for Supreme. And I ended up buying one that was a black camp cap with a corduroy brim. And the corduroy brim had like a leopard print on it. And, you know, as a college kid, it was like, you know, like a $50 hat or whatever. And, you know, it was like a lot of money to me. And I was like, you know, stoked that I got it. It was going to be like something I'd wear to class. So I got the hat and I, you know, liked it. I wore it. And then I was just like, you know what, I'm going to go on eBay and I'm just curious. Like, it's sold out, you know. I checked the web shop and it had sold out. And I was curious. And I was like, wait a second, this hat's going for like $250. Like, I didn't understand what was going on. So it turns out that, you know, I found out through kind of poking around the internet that Tyler, the Creator, had worn that hat at the VMAs. And I was like, wait a second, like, I can get $250 for this hat? Like, I'm a college kid. This is like, you know, like a week's worth of pay or whatever at, like, you know, whatever job you have on campus. So I ended up selling the hat on eBay, and then, like, kind of the rest is history. Like, every week I would go and see what the drop is and, you know, kind of scope it out and buy camp caps. This was also before Supreme ever had a presence in Europe. So they only had a US web shop, and I would ship almost all of my hats to Europe because that was the only way people could get them in Europe, because there was no, you know, Supreme wasn't shipping there yet. So that was my first, you know, kind of foray into sneakers and streetwear. And it really was kind of like through the economic lens of it, of like seeing that, hey, I'm a college kid, like, I don't have much money, like, I want to go out with my friends, go out to eat in the weekend, like, let me see what I can find, you know, to make a little bit of coin. But that was my first introduction. And then, yeah, I purchased, you know, some things during that season, and I really fell in love with the accessories. That was kind of what I fell in love with, all like the goofy accessories that Supreme would make. And I would try to pick those up, and then, you know, over the years kind of build a collection. And then obviously, you know, I remember very vividly some of the Supreme sneaker drops. And I think that kind of, you know, is what led me to be interested in sneakers. I remember the Supreme Foamposite release and all the craziness that happened in New York City. And I remember watching that from, you know, my dorm room out in the Midwest where I went to school in Chicago, and just thinking, man, this is like the coolest thing. I want to live in New York. I want to like be involved in sneaker and streetwear culture. So Yeah, that's a little bit about how I got into it, but obviously that was, you know, 12 years ago, and I'm still doing it.
It's funny because my streetwear origin story is quite similar. I went to NYU, so I was in New York and was really into Kith at the time, which, you know, started up in 2011, which was also my freshman year. And I remember being so naive and walking into the store whenever Ronnie and his team dropped, you know, the Gelite 3s, the Gelite 5s, and they were sold out immediately online. I was like, oh, maybe they still have some in store. And I would go there and ask them, and they'd be like, nah, man, we don't have anything. And I was like, oh, really? That's crazy. That's so weird. So it's funny how that then spiraled into having a career just like you in the industry. I also remember the Foamposite drop. I was actually at my internship in New York trying to cop them on the computer, and it was just impossible. I mean, it was mayhem in real life and online, so that was definitely like a very memorable release.
Yeah, was that back when you know, Kith was just that little side area of the Atrium store?
Yep, I worked at the Sports Center at NYU, which was maybe a block and a half from the original Kith store. So I would go there before and after every shift and be like, what can I spend my paycheck on now?
Yeah, I mean, that was, I remember going into that little store, and it's just like a little hole in the wall. But I mean, Ronnie, I mean, you got to really credit him with, you know, a lot of the things that we see today. I mean, ASICs are super hot right now. And like when he was doing Gelite 3s, like, you know, I think the amount of people that were interested in them is like a very core community that were really kind of like into ASICs specifically. But, you know, obviously that brand has, you know, taken on a life of its own following that. But yeah, I mean, I remember the thing I remember early on in Ronnie's career was those jogging pants that had the sweatshirt like cufflinks at the bottom. Right?
The Mercer pants,
yeah,
right?
The Mercer pants. Yeah, that was what they were called. And I remember those being sold out and like that being such a cool thing just because it was like designed with sneakerheads in mind, where like it would kind of cuff around your sock, right? So that your pant wouldn't hang over your shoe and you could like show off what you're wearing. And like that was kind of like, to me, at least from my recollection of it, like the genesis of like his career, right? Like I bet he made like so much money selling those pants that, you know, he was able to obviously eventually open his own store. And then, you know, I'm based here in Miami. So, you know, he's got two stores in Miami now, one on the beach and one downtown here in the Design District. And, you know, it's crazy to see how one little, you know, thing that potentially is forgotten by most people in the sneaker community, just like the simple design of one pant, which is obviously, you know, no longer in style, but, you know, really interesting to see how that developed into like him becoming one of, you know, probably the top, you know, icons and most important people in the industry that we're in.
Yeah, those pants were legendary. I was very close to buying a leather pair as well. This was right around the time where Kanye was wearing leather pants, and I was like, oh man, maybe I need to get one. But yeah, I didn't in the end, so that was probably a good decision. What about your first ever sneaker? Maybe not your first ever sneaker, but the first sneaker you bought yourself that had some sort of special meaning to it.
Yeah, I remember, so this is gonna go way back now. I looked it up to make sure I knew what year it was, but it was 2012, and it was, I don't know if there's any New Balance heads that listen to this call, but it was the New Balance 999 Concept Seal. It was a 2012 release, and it was based off of kind of the idea was like that it's an ocean-inspired 999, and the inside, like the sock liner, and the insole had like a topographical map of the ocean, and it was super cool. I thought that it was just so sweet. I remember buying it. I don't even think it really sold out that quickly. Again, it was 2012, but you know, it was like $180 retail or something like that, and obviously as a, you know, as a kid, like that's a lot of money. So I was pretty hyped on that. I wore that until like the soles fell off, and I think I just like gave them the Goodwill or something. But yeah, that was, you know, one of my favorite sneakers, you know, that I mean, it's really the first sneaker that I remember purchasing and really, you know, caring deeply about it.
Nice. And what about now? How have your tastes changed? Kind of like what are you wearing recently?
Yeah, recently, I mean, obviously I've been really impressed with what New Balance has been putting out as of late. You know, the 2002 R's, the 550s, you know, the 530s, a lot of like the 1906 R, 1906 D packs have been really solid. Of course, anything they're doing with ALD is really hot, and I like those as well. You know, also just a lot of Dunk Low colors. My favorite Dunk right now is probably the Passport Pack Pistachios from the Union Pack that released, I think, last year or 2 years ago at this point. But yeah, pretty heavy into the dunks and lows, a few Air Forces. I really like my acronym Air Forces, the ones that have the zipper on the side. I think those were released in 2017. But yeah, I love those like kind of classic models where it's a dunk or an Air Force One, and then, you know, they're taking just a small spin on it, right? And kind of making it their own, whether it's a collaboration or even just an inline release with Nike. And today I'm actually wearing the ASICS Gelcato 14 Jounds, the kind of, I don't know which color it is, I guess the white with the beige sole, but I think those are just super comfortable. I wear those pretty much, those are my daily drivers. I wear those to go to the grocery store and run errands and stuff.
Nice, good picks. What about StockX? So you're obviously working at StockX now, but were you a customer or a user before you joined them? And if so, what was your first purchase on StockX?
Yeah, I was. I mean, I became familiar with StockX in late 2017 when StockX launched streetwear. Obviously, before that, they were doing sneakers. My first purchase on StockX, I went back and looked. It was, this is a very obscure item, so you're gonna have to bear with me. But fall winter 2016 Supreme, the Capone and Noriega collaboration, which featured all the art from their album, The War Report, which like I loved that album. But the product that I bought, I mean, they had like a t-shirt, you know, kind of like one of their classic like hip hop t-shirts. But the item that I bought was actually a thermal shirt, and it had like the all over print was the album cover. It's like a ridiculous item. Like if you look it up, it like looks crazy. But that was my first purchase ever on StockX, and I don't have it anymore. I'm sure I kind of realized it was a little too much for me and I couldn't pull it off at some point, but that was my first purchase. And then, you know, as it relates to sneakers, you know, after I joined the company in 2018, I think my first paycheck went to the off-white Prestos, the 2018 pair. So the all-white pair, not the original 10 pair, but the all-white pair, which I still have those today. And, you know, an all-white Presto with a cloth upper, very hard to keep clean, so they're quite dirty at this point, but I still do have those.
Yeah, I actually dyed my white pair blue because I figured that these are going to get so beat up and dirty, I might as well just dictate what color they are to begin with.
A lot of people did that, right? I mean, that was kind of what was so cool, I think, about some of the stuff that Virgil put out, is like he was very encouraging of like, you know, customization and like making it your own. I remember him even saying, you know, the blue, what was it? The, like the Art Institute of Chicago, the blue Air Force Ones, right? That were like super expensive. They ended up, you know, it was very limited release. They're like, you know, resell for like $2,000. And someone asked him like, hey, like I can't afford these, but I really want them. Like, what should I do? He's just like, go buy an $80 Air Force One, put a little orange tag on it, piece of tape and paint it blue. Right. Like it was very you know, kind of cool to see that mindset come out. I think it encouraged a lot of people to do things just like that. And it brought like a new level of creativity, I think, to the sneaker space.
There was also a hashtag that went around around the time that the off-white account, the official one on Instagram, was promoting, which was, I forget the exact hashtag, but it was something along the lines of what you were saying, which is like, make it your own, or like off-white, I don't know, remix. It was probably way cooler than that. But that resulted in a lot of people dyeing their shoes or like cutting off pieces or whatever. I had a friend, he got the original Blazers from the original, the 10 from late 2017, and he wanted them to be lows. So he just cut the top off basically, and they turned out to be lows, and that was super cool. And stuff like that then, you know, gets reposted by your blogs and you know, aggregators, streetwear Instagram accounts and stuff like that. And I think that was the shoes themselves and the collaboration was cool, but the fact that it kind of made discussion between the community stuff was also really cool.
Well, yeah, and I mean, if you take a knife to the top of a blazer, it exposes that inner foam, right? And that was what, you know, like the Presto, right? Like it pulled the foam out of the tongue and sat it on top of the shoe, you know, for the original 10 and then for that, the second black and white pack that I mentioned. And so, you know, there was like a real design ethos to those, you know, sneakers. And you know, to me personally, I don't think there's like, a set or a, you know, a pair of sneakers or a collection of sneakers rather that really like defines kind of like this generation of sneakerhead culture better than the 2017 original 10 pack. Like those belong in a museum, in my opinion.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if the original 10 were, but all the samples and unreleased colorways were in that traveling exhibition, right? That you were talking about, the, what was it? The blue pair, the blue Air Force Ones, and the green ones came out, the white ones at the MoMA, I believe it was. So yeah, definitely it was something, it's like such a pivotal moment where you think it's like almost like pre and post Virgil Nike. That's kind of like, it's become a way of defining streetwear and sneaker eras, I feel.
Yeah, absolutely. I got to see that exhibition when it came to Miami during Art Basel, and it was pretty incredible. I think I spent, it was like, it's just one room. It wasn't like a huge exhibition, but I think I spent like an hour there just because, you know, it was really taking me back to, you know, my days kind of, you know, coming up in Chicago, going to college there, and being very, you know, interested in like the hip hop scene, obviously knowing who Virgil was. I actually went to a concert. This was, I believe it was 2013. It was A$AP Rocky's first tour, and it was the House of Blues in Chicago. And the opening act was a DJ group, little known DJ group by the name of Ben Trill, which was Heron Preston, Matt Williams, Flo Galarza, and Virgil. And like, no one knew who they were. Like, it was just like, everyone kind of showed up and they were like playing music and they were like jumping into the crowd and acting all crazy. And they had their, you know, hats with like the hashtags and the Yankees logo, like the ones that got obviously like super popular, you know, during that era. But I mean, yeah, that was, it was, it's crazy to see like the rise, right? Like he was just like some guy, like, you know, DJing, you know, obviously he was involved with RSVP Gallery at the time, but to become, you know, kind of the figurehead, I think, of, you know, the entire culture and kind of the torch carrier from that. It was cool to see that, and also cool to kind of follow along with that personally too.
Definitely. So you mentioned that you started at StockX in 2018. Walk us through kind of your career so far there, what your current position is, and how you got to where you are today.
Yeah, so I started as a content director for streetwear. So I was, you know, heavily focused on our streetwear business, which was at the time mostly Supreme. And that was how I got hired at StockX, was just that I was probably one of the world's foremost experts in Supreme, which, you know, you would have thought, you know, 8 years ago, 10 years ago, that's not a marketable skill, right? But, you know, I kind of found myself at the right place at the right time. And, you know, I loved the brand so much, and I was a collector and obviously, you know, someone that purchased something probably every single week. And so, you know, it just kind of perfectly happened where, you know, StockX launched streetwear, and, you know, I had reached out to a few people there and was kind of just, you know, pushing everyone's buttons, trying to get someone to interview me. And then eventually I got an interview there, and they, you know, flew me out to Detroit, and I sat down with, you know, at the end of the day, I sat down with Josh Luber, who's the co-founder and former CEO, and I handed him my resume. And, you know, like you bring your resume to the interview, right? You have your little folder.
Yeah.
And he's like, I don't want to look at this. I'm like, oh, I'm like, okay. And he's like, he's like, tell me what you know about Supreme, right? Like that was the interview. And, you know, we kind of left the conversation being like, yeah, like you would fit here. Like, you know, I'll send you an email on Monday, right? It was like a Friday. I was like, this is crazy, right? Like I'd never been to Detroit in my life, right? I was working in a completely different industry at the time. And so, you know, it worked out, right? I got the offer on Monday. I think, you know, I was basically in Detroit, you know, a week or two later, having never been there other than for the interview. And I said, you know what, I still to this day say, look, it could have been in the middle of Iowa. I would have still taken the job because it was like, it was just perfect for my interests and, you know, the skill set that I had and the expertise that I had. So I spent, you know, a year or two on that team. And then, you know, one of my side projects while I was, you know, doing the streetwear daily kind of content stuff, which, you know, at a startup, it seems like, you know, kind of everyone has a side project. My side project was launching Cause Toys onto the site. And so we did that, and, you know, it had a lot of success. That was around the time, it was shortly after Cause like released the open edition versions of the companions at the MoMA, and there was a lot of them out there and they were reselling well. And obviously our customers, our sneaker and streetwear customers, you know, knew those products well. And then so, you know, from there it was like, you know, we started adding some Bear Bricks and we started adding some Murakami plushes. And, you know, I just kind of became, it's like, you know, someone's asking, hey, what's going on with this collectible? What's going on with that collectible? Oh, just ask Drew. And so I kind of became the default collectibles guy. And I was like, wait a minute, like, you know, I feel like I can have a bigger impact potentially just working on collectibles. So that was what I did, was I, you know, kind of transferred into a, you know, category management, business development role. And then from there, you know, I you know, kind of was a part of the team that launched the collectibles category on StockX, which obviously is a lot bigger than just Cause and Bear Brick today. You know, we do very well with things like Legos and Funkos and action figures, you know, comic books, etc. And so we grew that, you know, to be a really, you know, sizable marketplace. We, you know, brought in talent from the collectibles industry to help run it. It's been, you know, a really incredible run. And then, you know, last year I had the opportunity to step into basically that exact same role for collectibles, but for the sneakers category, right? So, you know, as the category director for sneakers, I'm responsible for, you know, all of our growth numbers, right? You know, my goal is, you know, obviously to just grow the category, make it bigger, bring on more customers. But to do that, you know, it's everything from how do our product pages look? How do the photos look? You know, the descriptions on the pages, the richness on the pages, are we providing all the accurate information to customers? How's our SEO? What products do we put on the homepage? What influencers do we work with? What do our socials look like? What items go in emails, right? When do we send push notifications for releases? You know, everything kind of soup to nuts, top to bottom of the category. And it's a really, really fun job. It's obviously very challenging and the market changes very quickly. But it's an incredible, you know, position to be in, an incredible opportunity. And, you know, obviously I've had, you know, a great time here at StockX for the last 5 years.
Sounds like a big part of your job is understanding the culture, the trends, what's going on, what's cool, what's not, what's going to be cool. So how do you stay in touch with all of that? Is it a lot of social media? Is it a lot of people in the industry that you talk to? Do you have any go-to blogs or accounts that you follow?
Yeah, I think all of the above. I mean, it's also, we have really robust access to data too, just through like our systems, right? So we can see what's trending. Like right now, you know, I had someone hit me up this morning and said, hey, like, you know, the campus, you know, double zeros are really crushing it right now. Like let's get something behind it, right? So, you know, we try to, you know, identify those trends before they happen. But yeah, it's all the above. I think, you know, it's equal parts art and science too, right? So like we have the data, and we're looking at like what's trending, what's popping, you know, where are the big premiums, what's reselling, what's doing very well, you know, at or below retail. But then it's just like, you know, also our anecdotal experiences, all of us who live and breathe this culture at the company, it's not just me. I mean, there's dozens of people who are constantly looking after these things. And, you know, something I noticed probably about a year or two ago was when I would go out to restaurants, bars, clubs in Miami, I would see people wearing Salomons. And I was like, people are wearing these as like a fashion item, right? Like I'd obviously known about the brand as like a trail shoe for some time. And so I was like, this is really interesting, right? Like people are wearing these. And so I got myself a pair. I'm like, you know, I really like these. I wear them going out, not just to like walk or run around, but like, you know, actually to go out to like a dinner or something like that. And sure enough, over the last, you know, year, it's been like one of the fastest growing brands on StockX. It's up like 2,000%. You know, they've obviously done a really good job kind of touching, you know, fashion culture and hypebeast culture and street culture with some of their collaborations, like the Sandy Liang one that came out recently that sold out and is, you know, reselling for a huge premium. But I think that also speaks to a larger trend that we're seeing, which is that sneakerheads need more, like, and they want more diversity in their closet, right? I think like when we think of sneakerhead culture, we obviously think of, you know, Jordans, Dunks, you know, maybe Yeezys in the past, we would think of that as one of the bigger, you know, brands and something that everyone has. But, and you know, sneakerheads are always going to want those things, right? I'm not saying that Jordans and Dunks and, you know, kind of the Adidas, you know, standard inline models that have been hot for so long, they're not going anywhere, right? People still need those. But what we are seeing is a trend where these kind of emerging brands, if you will, so brands that either, you know, have had some success in kind of, you know, sneakerhead culture or really no success in the past, are kind of taking from, you know, Nike and Adidas's playbook, working with collaborators. I mean, like I said, I have the ASICs, the Jound ASICs that I'm wearing right now. I think those are awesome. I mean, ASICs is one brand that's doing super well. Salomon that I mentioned, Hoka is also doing very well. But even just kind of those brands that have been around for some time, like, you know, Vans, ASICs, Converse, Diadora. These are brands that we actually see a lot of interest in and growth. And I think, again, they're taking that playbook of working with, you know, the best creators and the best creatives in the world, and then, you know, bringing that into, you know, the models that they've had on their roster that have always been popular, but maybe haven't gained traction with the sneakerhead community yet. So it's really cool to see this kind of, you know, diverse set of brands playing in the space as opposed to just being one or two really big players.
Yeah, for sure. That's something we've seen develop over the last couple of years. And I think one of my high snobiety quarterly reports with StockX data was about that, that the trend that year was that there are no real overarching trends, but that, like you said, these smaller brands or maybe more niche products are getting the love that ultimately they deserve because it's good product.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
So you've mentioned a couple trends already, but what are some others that you've seen develop in the sneaker world this year? You know, there's the 2000s runner craze, or at least a lot of brands are putting out 2000s runners. The Zoom Vomero is doing really well as well. But then you're seeing a lot of like monochrome, like white cream colored sneakers again, actually, because a couple of years that was a trend. Are there any trends that you can like pinpoint as maybe either your favorite or ones that are kind of really have momentum behind them?
Yeah, I like that you bring up the Vomeros. I had, or I still do have, the Cold Wall Vomeros with that big plastic pod in the back. And I actually had a chance, it was probably a few months ago, Samuel Ross, I bumped into him here in Miami, and we talked about it. He's like, oh yeah, funny how, you know, Nike brought, you know, 12 colors back for that shoe, right? And I was like, you did it first, man. Like, you know, that, I don't think that model would be what it is without the Cold Wall collab, because it was just such, you know, a unique design aesthetic to be added to that sneaker. So yeah, I like that Nike's bringing that one back for sure. I think the other one I would touch on would just be, you know, and I don't know how much of this is related to the World Cup or how much of it's here to stay, but certainly like soccer inspired, you know, models, particularly like the Sambas and Gazelles, you know, those have, you know, just crushed it for us. I mean, year to date, we have almost done 10x the amount of Sambas that we did last year at this point. So that gives you a sense of just how popular Sambas and Gazelles are with consumers, and they're super affordable, right? I mean, in some cases, you know, these are under $100 pairs. I know Sean Weatherspoon's releasing a Gazelle soon, and I think that's probably, you know, in my opinion, the best, you know, at least from what I've seen of the photos so far, the best sneaker he's put out with Adidas, and I think that's going to be really hot. So yeah, I mean, I think, you know, soccer probably here to stay. Certainly the World Cup, I think, had an effect on that trend kind of starting. But I mean, you know, going back to even just some of the early 2000s kind of running inspired stuff, there's a nostalgia with Sambas, right? Like we all played indoor soccer as a kid. And then, you know, we had the Sambas, like your mom would take you to the soccer store and you get the Sambas with the flat bottoms, right? And, you know, just like during COVID, how nostalgia, you know, was a huge piece of kind of everyone's taste trends at the time. We're kind of looking for those things that reminded us of, you know, maybe simpler times or times when we were a kid. I think, you know, the Samba and Gazelle trend fits right into that as well.
I love that you brought that up, because I feel like the Samba trend on the one hand is kind of a pivot back to basics as well, away from collaborations, away from, you know, crazy colors, and just really no frills, relatively affordable shoes. Although I saw recently that Sambas are now selling for, I think, $120 or €120, and they used to be well under 100. So Adidas is definitely capitalizing on the hype right now. But that leads me to my next question, which is an interesting one, because you obviously have access to a lot of data. But do you think that a lot of trends are determined more by the brands or the consumers? Because on the one side, consumers can only buy what's put out and presented to them, right? And brands are deciding, hey, we want to bring back 2000s runners. It's time. But on the other hand, consumers can basically vote with their wallets, right? So who do you think is really driving trends? Or is it a mixture of both?
That's a great question. I don't know that I've ever really thought about it like that. I mean, I would say that it's the consumers, right? Like what, you know, the tastemakers kind of choose to go with. Obviously it has to be a product that, you know, the brand's producing, but ultimately, you know, unless there's smoke, you know, the brand can't create a fire, right? So like, I think the consumer, you know, kind of creates that smoke and kind of gets the ball rolling. And then the brand will say, okay, we're seeing, you know, Sambas sell really well. Let's bring back some OG colorways. Let's, you know, drop a couple different, you know, packs, and go from there. But, yeah, an example of that, which is, you know, really interesting, and is kind of adjacent to sneakerhead culture, but I think starting to touch it is UGG. Last fall, UGG was like the hottest thing. I mean, we did UGG numbers like you wouldn't believe. I mean, there was a point where UGG was the fifth largest brand on StockX behind only Nike, Jordan, Adidas, and New Balance. And then it was UGG.
Wow.
And that's like across all of our categories, right? So like Supreme, apparel, you know, et cetera. And that was not because UGG tried to do that, right? That was because there was a trend and, you know, men were buying them, women were buying them, you know, they started to sell out at, you know, some of the retailers, you know, locally here in the States and then globally as well. And, you know, then it became a trend. And now, you know, UGG, you see them put out collaborations with brands like Telfar, right? So it's push and pull. It goes both directions. But that's part of my job, right, in the role that I sit, is to recognize the trends early, capitalize on them, and then make sure that, you know, we work with the sellers to bring the products to the site that our customers ultimately want.
And so as trends ebb and flow, that obviously affects the current state of the resale market. How would you describe that at the moment? How has the resale market developed over the past year?
Yeah, it's been really interesting to see, right? Like, you know, I think outside of even sneakers and streetwear or, you know, this kind of hypebeast culture that we talk about, during COVID, like everything was reselling. Like almost anything was reselling, right? And you know, that may not be the case anymore. I mean, some things are up, some things are down, but I think, you know, overall the resale market and the sneaker market in general is quite healthy. I mean, if you look at, you know, 2021 versus 2022, we did more orders in 2022 than we did in 2021. So more trades and you know, we hope to lap that again this year. But to me, I think the difference right now is that it is a little bit more of a buyer's market. And for sellers, it's become more of a quantity game. So I'll explain that like this. Like in the past, a seller might be able to sell, you know, 100 pairs at $100 profit each, and they would make $10,000, right? If you have access to really good supply, that would be something that's possible. Today, you know, that seller, where we're seeing success with sellers, is more so in a seller selling 1,000 pairs at $10 profit each, right? So, you know, they're making the same amount of money, so to speak, if they have access to the supply, and the demand is still there from a volume standpoint, but the margins have decreased a little bit, which, you know, to me, as someone who loves sneakers and wants to wear them, like, I think it's a great opportunity for sneakerheads to come in and say, hey, like, you know, if it's a new Jordan, for example, like, you can come in and get that at a really fair, like, what I would think is a really fair price, right? Like, the Spider-Verse 1s came out, you know, last Saturday, and this is one of the hottest Jordan releases of the year. It's basically Chicago colorway, and it's, you know, a Spider-Man collaboration. Like, that hasn't happened since the Origin stories back in 2017, and those now go for, like, $800 a pair, right? So I was, you know, I guess somewhat pleased to see, actually, that the price is, you know, kind of in that $250 mark, because, you know, there's margin for, you know, sellers to come in and make a few bucks, but it's also like, you know, that's only $50 over retail, right? So, and, you know, I look at that sneaker and I say, you know, if the Origin stories from 2017, 6 years later, are going for $800, these should also be going for that in 6 years too, right? And, you know, again, as a collector and someone who loves sneakers, I'm just glad that I was able to get a pair for less than $800, right? So, you know, I think it's changing, right? And we still do see, obviously, you know, a Travis Scott or a Tiffany Air Force One, right? Those are still going to demand huge premiums and be unaffordable for most people. But, you know, it's really cool, I think, to see, you know, and this is ultimately why, one of the reasons why I joined StockX 5 years ago was because StockX provided access to people that didn't have access before, right? And so, you know, it was so hard to get a sneaker release before StockX. And now, you know, with the aggregation of all of the supply onto one product page, we make it simple, we verify the product for you. You know, that was, you know, the reason I joined StockX, because I was tired of getting scammed on eBay, right? Like, it happens to everyone, or, so, you know, everyone has a horror story. So, you know, I think the access that we're providing is, you know, at an all-time high. And, you know, not only that, not only is it access, but, you know, some of the price premiums have fallen a little bit. And I think it's just a great moment for sneakerheads in general, people who truly love sneakers, to grab the things that they want at a great price.
Back to your first point about the margins getting a little bit slimmer, but that not really being an issue because it's moved from higher margins to just larger scale for the resellers. Do you think that that shift or the fact that this is happening, I mean, it's obviously a good thing for StockX because it's kind of future-proofed your business model a little bit, right? Because there's always the naysayers that say, you know, when resale dies, so will StockX or so will platforms like StockX. But it seems like resale doesn't need to mean making $1,000 off a sneaker. It can be making, like you said, 10, 15 bucks off of 100 sneakers or 1,000 sneakers.
Yeah, and I would go even further than that, and I won't share, you know, specific numbers on this, but a pretty significant portion of our sneaker business actually occurs below retail price. And, you know, what's exciting about that to me is that, you know, regardless of whether or not the sneakers are reselling for $100 over retail, or we, you know, or they're, you know, what we would call bricks and they're going below retail, you know, there's a business for that and there is, you know, demand for that. And we have sellers, you know, that, you know, they're getting their inventory from, you know, wholesale, right? And they're even willing to sell a little bit under retail and they still have a little bit of margin there too. So the seller wins, the buyer wins, everyone wins, right? And, you know, you may not have to pay what you once did. But the reason I even bring that up is just because I don't know that the consumer views StockX yet as a place to get a good deal, right? I think you view it as like, oh, shoot, I missed the drop. I might have to pay a little bit over retail, right? And we obviously, you know, if you miss the drop, we always have it covered, right? And I think we'll almost always have the best price as well. But, you know, you can come to StockX and search for deals. I mean, we have a filter. You go to sneakers and you click below retail. You can see, I mean, we have, you know, an incredible selection of product, you know, well under retail price, you know, in some cases, you know, even, you know, 30, 40, 50% below retail price. So I would encourage people to come to StockX to, you know, kind of browse for the steals and deals and not just when you miss out on that, you know, hot drop that you wanted.
Yeah, I think it's fair to say that the magic of StockX is mostly the accessibility that it offers its users, right? Before StockX, regionally exclusive sneakers were much harder to come by, or, you know, not even regionally exclusive hype sneakers, but just sneakers that you couldn't get where you live. And now all you have to do is log on to StockX, put in a bid, or, you know, buy now, and then you have your sneaker a week later, which is pretty cool.
Yep. Yeah, that's exactly what happens, right? Because we have a global seller base, right? We have a global buyer base. So if there's a, you know, a Korea exclusive, right? Or let's say Korea, for example, gets a sneaker 3 weeks before the US release, you can buy it, you know, when it released in Korea, and it will be at your door, right, in the US before it releases, you know, locally. So, yeah, tons of just, you know, access opportunities for consumers. And, you know, the other thing I'll mention too is just that, you know, obviously from our perspective, you know, we put the product page up and then the price is the price, right? The buyers and sellers set the price. You know, it's you know basic economic supply and demand. So if a sneaker is going for 300 over, great, that's what the market demands. If it's going for 30% below retail, great, that's what, you know, the market demands. And, you know, we try to highlight, you know, the key products that we think are good deals. But ultimately, another, you know, again, a piece of StockX that I really love in terms of the model is just that we allow our consumers to decide the price, right? We aren't getting something on consignment and then setting the price, right? It's purely a free market.
We always like to, when we're talking to you, your colleagues before you, we always like to get some sort of insight into StockX's plans for the year, for 2023 and beyond, but specifically for the European and German markets, because a lot of our listeners are German and sit here. So if you can share a little bit about that, are there any big moves or big steps forward planned for the next 12 to 24 months?
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, we, many of your listeners may know that we opened our Berlin AC, our what we call AC Authentication Center, in 2022. And that's huge for a number of reasons. Obviously, it's faster shipping for buyers and sellers, faster payouts for sellers, faster shipping for buyers. But it also basically makes it cheaper to transact because there's a limited number of like import duties and taxes with having that local facility there. So that's, you know, I think, you know, obviously one of the biggest things that we've done. On top of that, you know, we've partnered with you know, Crip City, which is a, you know, sneaker convention I'm sure, again, your consumers are familiar with. And, you know, we will be at the Berlin, you know, showing of that in November of this year. So that's definitely something to look out for. And then beyond that, I mean, we have some really exciting partnerships in the European market. You know, we just launched a partnership with Modis in Paris. So there's sneakers. You can actually walk in and purchase sneakers from StockX and walk out with them, right? So you don't have to wait for shipping. They're in there and they're ready to go. We have an incredible selection of products there. So anyone, you know, who's in Paris or visiting would encourage them to check that out. And then we're also going to be working with High Snobiety for an event for Paris Fashion Week coming up. So a lot of exciting stuff happening, you know, in both the German market and the, you know, European market as a whole.
To wrap it up, StockX has changed a lot in the time that you've been there, but also since it was founded. Obviously, the business model has changed, but just everything, the offering and everything else has changed. The way people interact with the app, interact with you guys as a company. What does your perfect version of StockX look like?
Yeah, that's a great question. I guess I would put it, you know, somewhat simply, and that is like transactional efficiency and like perfection and transactional efficiency. So that's kind of a loaded statement. So what does that actually mean? That means that every time you order something, you get it and you get it quickly, right? I mean, today, you know, you can run into an issue, right, where you're a buyer and you buy something and the seller doesn't ship it, or the seller sends us a fake and we stop it, right? And so we save you obviously from getting that, but you know, you still don't get your sneaker, or you have to wait, right? You get a refund instead. And so what my perfect version of StockX is that, you know, 100% of the time we are getting you what you ordered, and we're getting it to you quickly. And, you know, again, I won't say too much about our future plans for the company, but I think, you know, the roadmap that we have built, you know, with the team internally addresses just that, right? It's about creating a perfect customer experience for our buyers every single time, and then making, you know, things like inventory management and selling and sell through for our sellers go that much faster, so they can bring more product to market, acquire more product, get more sales, and then ultimately please more customers.
It sounds like interesting times ahead. Thank you very much, Drew, for your time and for your insights. It was a pleasure having you on the podcast.
Thanks for having me.
Und damit vielen Dank, dass ihr bei der 134. Episode mit dabei wart. Ihr könnt alle Episoden wie gewohnt kostenlos bei Spotify, Apple Podcasts, YouTube, Deezer, Amazon und wie sie nicht alle heißen hören. Also im Endeffekt bei allen Streaming-Diensten. Und wir würden uns natürlich sehr freuen, wenn ihr dem O-Shoom Podcast und unserem News-Podcast O-News folgt und die Release-Info aktiviert, das ist diese kleine Glocke, dann verpasst ihr auch keine Folge mehr. Checkt uns auch auf Facebook, TikTok und Instagram.com/O-Shoom-Podcast und werdet Teil der O-Community. Checkt auf jeden Fall auch die Sneaker-Suchmaschine von Sneakerjägers und holt euch die kostenlose App von Deadstock Sneakerblog. Supporten könnt ihr uns unter anderem mit einer positiven 5-Sterne-Bewertung bei Spotify und Apple Podcasts. Über 800 positive Bewertungen hat O-Shoom auf den Plattformen schon und eine Apple Podcast Review würden wir hier gerne mit euch teilen. Ste-May schrieb: OG Sneaker Podcast. Seit Episode 1 wird alle 2 Wochen abgeliefert, dass Hermes und Co. neidisch werden. Sympathisch, authentisch und immer wieder ein Genuss in den Ohren. Shoutout an dich, vielen Dank. Tut uns einen Gefallen und supportet die Podcasts und erzählt mindestens einem Freund oder einer Freundin von uns, die sich für Sneaker und Streetwear interessiert. Show some love. Dankeschön. Wir hören uns in der nächsten Episode wieder. Bis dahin, macht's gut.
Peace. Oh,